darkest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light.
Welcome to this special edition of Green Lantern's Light. The reason for this special edition is to cover the DC retroactive book that would have been set during the period that we cover. In 2011, DC did an initiative that really took different eras of their characters and reprinted stories that would have appeared in that time period. With Green Lantern, we have one that's roughly set between 187 and 188, which we covered last episode. So, we want to cover this just for complete coverage, and I think Jeffrey has the synopsis on this special edition.
I do, and one thing that's interesting to note before we jump into it is that a lot of the retroactive stories, what they managed to do was write a new chapter as though it could fit between two given issues. And this one did not exactly do that. It was actually more of a telling a story that we just talked about in the last episode in a very different way. And there are certain things about it that make it almost impossible for it to really fit into the era, the way that we've been reading it. But it's still a good story. It has its ups and downs. I do prefer the original one, but this one is still very good in its own right.
And whenever possible, they would get the original or as much of the original creative team as possible.
Right. And this one did have a different artist.
Mm-hmm.
But it is I'll go through the credits in just a second. It came out August 10th, 2011. The title is The Big Betrayal. The credits for this are Len Wein, writer, Joe Staton, penciler. They actually didn't so much work together very much during the book. Did they work together at all? I thought it was pretty much all Dave Gibbons when Len was writing. Okay.
Yeah.
Andy Owens, anchor. Wes Abbott, letterer. Alan Passalacqua as the colorist. And Ben Abernathy is the editor on this. To recap, John Stewart, the Green Lantern, heads out to sea and dives into the water. He uses his ring to construct a sonar device and learns that what he's looking for is at the bottom of the ocean's deepest trench. He dives further and further until at last he finds the shark.
Wow, you pretty much took my whole note. Sigh, the shark. That's my little note. So
he's hijacked a nuclear submarine, and Shark notices that this Green Lantern smells different from the other one. Yeah, Green Lanterns don't all smell the same. John attacks, but Shark shoots off a bunch of nuclear missiles, forcing John to chase after them instead of apprehending Shark. John pretty quickly and successfully stops all of the missiles. He throws the warheads into the sun, Superman 4 reference, and brings the rockets back to Shark. He turns to and uses his ring to transmute them into a shark cage to bring Shark to the surface. Shark says he can still use a psionic ability, but John has thought of that and removes the oxygen from the water around him, making him weak enough to pass out. Later, John joins Tawny Young for dinner. He still looks like the masked Green Lantern, but everyone else sees a middle-aged doctor. That way, they won't be disturbed while they eat. After dinner, they head to the park in order to talk, but John has to deal with a rude, crude dude who won't turn down his Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang, which is playing on his boombox. John asks nicely, but the guy's being a real jerk. So John breaks it without the guy knowing it. And when he tries to open the battery cover to see what the problem is, a green gremlin pops out, and that scares him enough to make him run away. So finally that they're alone, John comes clean with Tawny. He likes her a lot. In fact, I think he says that he loves her. So he removes his mask and tells her who he really is. The next morning, John wakes up and turns on the news to hear a report that John Stewart is Green Lantern. Reporters are swarming his apartment, so he tries to leave and not give them any comments, but they won't leave him alone, so he turns into Green Lantern in front of them and flies off. He goes to Tawny's news office and gives her a piece of his mind. She admits that it was too good of a story, and now she might be up for a Pulitzer. John warns her that since people will see her as Green Lantern's girlfriend, she's going to be in constant danger. She just says that she's a big girl and she can take care of herself. In one of the seedier parts of Coast City, the villain Sonar catches the report that Tawny is Green Lantern's girlfriend, so he dresses up in his Sergeant Pepper costume, and he gears up so that he can make his dinky little country famous, which is his primary motivator as a villain, by the way. John is out doing super feats when he flies by a TV store with the news playing in the window. Tawny is reporting about Green Lantern's identity again when Sonar uses a sound wave to knock her out and publicly challenges Green Lantern to a duel. He has, in the space of 2 seconds, tied Tawny to the top of the station's roof antenna. So John flies off and makes it there in record time. He goes to untie Tawny when he's hit by sonar beams. John is able to deal with him pretty easily, so Sonar turns his sonar weapon to the antenna, which makes the antenna become rubbery, and it starts to fall with Tawny. John catches her and says, "Told you so, bitch," and constructs stereo speakers and a giant bell to stop Sonar. As they cart Sonar off to jail, John stops him and says, "You know you're a serious idiot, right?" And Sonar says, "I just want to make my country famous." So John says, "You stupid emo haircut. Patent your inventions and make your country famous for sonic equipment. Seriously. And don't drop the soap." He doesn't say all of that verbatim, but still. The reporters catch up. Yeah. The reporters catch up with him, and Tawny included, so that they can ask him about the fight on camera. John grabs Tawny's mic and says to the camera, "Dude, I seriously don't like this woman. I don't care if you attack her. So there's no good reason to kidnap her to get to me." And he takes his mask off and throws it at her. The end.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Who wants to kick it off this time? Michael wants.
I'll go first. I like the idea of this cover, but the style isn't really my favorite. And I think John really needed to be front and center on it. Hal and Guy
I agree. I think the thing is that Hal is the Green Lantern now, so...
Right, yeah.
And Guy is not in this at all, or in the backup.
No.
He was basically a vegetable.
Yeah. And the backup story, by the way, I probably should have mentioned, is the first regular issue that we covered. I think it was Green Lantern 172?
Yes.
Yeah.
In episode 2 of the show, right.
Which doesn't mesh up with anything.
Really, it would have been better if they had done 188, but then it wouldn't have been a Len Wein story.
Right.
But I guess maybe this is how Len Wein would have told the story.
Yeah. But yeah, I understand for marketing purposes why Hal is so prominent, but I don't know, in the spirit of the era, they're jumping back to it, really needed to be John. But yeah, overall, I thought this was just a great read. In a lot of ways, it really did read like a book from the era we've been covering. There are some fairly major continuity issues in that it revises or completely contradicts much of what Steven Englehart did in the first two issues we looked at last episode, which, you know, as we said, makes it impossible to actually put this in at any one point, even though it kind of does take place at a pretty specific time. But on the other hand, if you ignore the two Englehart written issues, you can place this after 187, and it really does read like a lost chapter from Wein's run. One complaint, if you can even call it that, is that there's no mention at all of the supporting cast members, like Hal or Carol or the Predator or any of that, or April or Clay. As we've seen, those have been pretty big parts of the title, and it would have been nice to at least seen them referenced in some way, even if it was just a one page of FaceTime to basically check in that they were there, you know. But that's just a relatively minor quibble, because I did really like this quite a bit, and it's interesting to get a sort of a final chapter in Wein's run, even if it is 26 years later and doesn't fit at all. The art, on the other hand, was a lot less familiar. Staton's developed a much more cartoonish style than since he worked on Green Lantern, and while it's fine for what it is, it wasn't as close an approximation to the comics in 1984 or 1985 as the writing was. But still, yeah. I didn't hate the art. It just didn't hit the mark as well as Ween did in the writing.
And there are production differences in the way books are made now versus then.
Very much, yeah.
That contributed, but the art's noticeably different.
Yeah. I do think it's kind of odd that they went with Len Wein and Joe Staton for the team here, since they never worked together. So I don't know if Steve Englehart or Dave Gibbons weren't available, or if they just decided to split the difference. But getting into my page-by-page, my note for page 3
Unfortunately, there are no page numbers, which is always a pain in the butt when you're podcasting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Page 3, my note was, the shark. Jeffrey's going to love this.
I have a frowny face on that, too. But
thankfully, though, if you notice, they dropped the invisible yellow part from the force field. It's just a psionically created shield now, so there's a little bit of improvement. Jumping ahead to page 5, I loved this part with John stopping the missiles. It was really fun. This is a great panel here, panel 2, with the cables just kind of pouring from the ring and then snagging the missiles one after another in the following panels. This whole book was really fun. It's just nice to see they can still do fun comics these days. Books that are just a joy to read. Page 6, when in doubt, throw it into the sun.
Superman 4 reference.
Superman 4 reference, yeah.
Although Superman 4 came out after this story would have taken place, so technically this is original.
Right. John Stewart did it first.
Yeah.
Page 8, John uses his power ring to make himself look like a middle-aged doctor. I'm not sure if it was intentional, but I thought that was a kind of a nice throwback to the issue with Major Disaster, where John made all the people look like they were wearing Green Lantern costumes. Page 11, this is one of the continuity issues I mentioned, because John tells Tawny they've been seeing each other for a while now, but they really haven't. They've only been on the one date that we've seen, and as far as Tawny was concerned, that was all business. But again, if you ignore the Englehart issues and place this chronologically sometime after 187, I guess it makes sense. Page 12, why does John have a mirror ball in his bedroom? Exactly.
You mean you don't have one?
Not my bedroom, no.
Oh, okay.
That's a light bulb.
Do you keep yours in the kitchen or
bathroom?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
That's where the real disco happens.
That's right. Let's see. I totally lost my notes now. Page 14. I really like this, too. After his identity is exposed, he tries to hide it, and then he's like, screw it. All right, so I'm Green Lantern. So what? And flies off. That just fits John Stewart to me, especially with how he'd been portrayed to this point in the books. And I think that's one of the strongest parts of the issue, is that they stuck with the portrayal as it was then, and not when they first announced these specials. My fear was that they were going to take today's portrayal of the characters and try to tell a story set, 20 years ago. But at least in this issue, they really stuck with the portrayal of how he was back in 1985, which I liked.
They didn't do just a modern story with 80s references, but
right, yeah.
Yeah, I actually haven't read all of the retroactive books. I have them all, but I haven't read every single one of them. I did read all of the Superman ones, and again, one of the things that I really liked about those is that, at least as far as I could tell, that they were stories that could be inserted between issues and not a complete makeover of an existing story.
Like this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Page 17 and 18, I have no idea how Sonar got Tawny strung up on the tower in a matter of seconds.
It's one of his sonic weapons that did it.
Okay. Page 18, John says, Sonar? Really? Talk about starting at the bottom. Yeah, my thoughts exactly.
Yes.
Though over on page 19, he mentions Goldface as being a threat. Yeah, I don't think Goldface is much of a threat, except for the fact that he's yellow. So.
No, he's gold.
Gold, whatever. Page 25 and 26, I thought this whole scene was fantastic. I loved John throwing down the gauntlet to those that would potentially threaten him or his friends. And then he turns to Tawny, and there's some really excellent dialogue between them. It's so well written that you actually do feel bad for Tawny, but at the same time, you know where John's coming from, and he was totally right in what he said. The script on these two pages is just very well done. It isn't drawn out or overly dramatic. It just gets right to it and says what needs to be said. Overall, I really, really enjoyed this issue. I think Ween echoed what he was doing back in 1984 without being pandering, I guess is one word. You know, it wasn't just a random story set in this time period that had no consequence. It's set at a fairly specific moment that you can put it in the chronology, but you have to ignore what comes after it. And I think with a little effort, they could have actually made it work with what Engelhart did too. But if you ignore that, it very much fits with what Ween did on the title. So I really, really liked it. I haven't read any of the other retroactive specials. I do have the three Superman ones and the Green Lantern 90s. But when I get to those, I hope that they are as enjoyable as this issue was.
Hit or miss. I'll give you that warning. The Superman ones I thought were really solid. Hmm. Especially Bogdanov and Simonson in their 90s.
That was so good.
Yeah, that was the one that stood out so much to me.
And it really does take place at a very specific moment, and it goes back to something that they had already done a couple years before that Michael and I had just talked about.
Cool. I've kind of tried to avoid spoilers for the ones I picked up and want to read, but looking at reviews for those and the other ones, it does kind of seem like overall the retroactive specials were – some were hit, some were miss. Mm-hmm. So –
I'll jump in here. Page 8, nobody seems is freaking out about Green Lantern being in the restaurant because they're all in awe of B.B. King. I mean, he actually mentions that all they'll see is a doctor. Right. Well, how do people know? I can't look at somebody and see a doctor. Maybe that's really being nitpicky, but
yeah, I didn't quite get why they would say, oh, that guy must be a doctor.
Yeah. page 9, I'm actually siding with the Sugar Hill guy because he was actually sitting there first minding his own business, and then John decided to choose that spot for the convo and then vandalize his stereo.
It's still a noise pollution issue. I mean, this is a time where there are headphones, and that really is the expectation. But I'll get into that.
Okay.
Do you expect him to wear headphones with those big hoop earrings, though?
I think John should have ripped the hoop earrings out because they're stupid looking.
Uh-huh. Well, they go with the fro and the wide collar.
That was how things were in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Come on, Jeffrey. You were there.
It's like when George...
Different strokes.
It's like in... I think it was late 70s or early 80s. George Carlin was doing a stand-up routine. And he says, hey, any men out there, raise your hand if you have an earring. Can I borrow a sanitary napkin?
Got a George Carlin quote in. Well played, sir. Page 11. This scene just cracked me up when he's telling Tawny, because it's John pulling a Connor McCloud where he tells the girl the secret, and basically it's in hopes of getting them into bed. And with Connor McCloud, it seems to work in every instance.
At least he didn't stab himself first.
Well, yeah, there's that.
And Duncan did the same thing with Tessa in the TV series, but he had her shoot him in the heart.
Because basically all immortals are, you know, looking for the score. page 16.
Well, you know he got some that night.
Oh, yeah. They always
do. In the movie, there was no veiling it.
Yeah. Especially in the third one. Or the second one, to be accurate. Final Dimension.
Final Dimension was 3.
It was the second movie, Jeffrey.
The Final Dimension was 3, but if you're talking about the second movie, that was the Gathering.
Jeffrey.
Yeah?
Okay, I see where you're going. Okay. Wait, you're not talking about Highlander 2
Quickening.
I'm talking
about what the title of it was.
Okay. The TV show.
Oh, the TV show. Okay.
No. I don't count Highlander 2 as existing.
Oh, okay. I think of it as an Elseworlds.
There you go. I can live with that.
That's how I can watch it.
I can live with that. That's the first time I've ever had... Yeah. I appreciate that.
I think of it as an Elseworlds, and as long as it's the Renegade version, which is pretty much the only one you can find anyway at this point.
They've all been sucked into some weird suck dimension. Page 16, why does Sonar have a more pronounced accent? Well, here's a better question. What is Sonar doing here?
Drawing attention to his country of Modora.
Mordova.
Mordova.
One does not simply walk into Mordova.
Yeah, but if you do, it won't take that long to get out the other side.
It was like, we've had the shark, we've had Sonar, how many morts can we get? And kind of on that same track, on page 18, where you did mention, he's like, well, I'm starting at the bottom. That's a good line, it's funny, but John has already fought Major Disaster, Shark, and Eclipso by this point.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to wonder now, because if you put this story into continuity, it would mean Green Lantern had to capture Sonar 3 times in 3 issues. And as we already mentioned, it didn't mesh well. But I'm starting to wonder if Lynn Wein made a new script, or they had existing scripts on where Wein wanted to go, and they just said, here, Staten, draw this.
I'm guessing that it was not an existing script. It may have been a partial existing script. Maybe he added the stuff with the shark. Or maybe this was the story that he was intending to tell, and I don't know, he threw Sonar into it because Sonar was part of the actual story.
So maybe it's like a Donner cut. It's the Wein cut of these 2 issues. Because it's about the length of 2.
Okay. I'm sorry?
It's kind of the length of 2 issues, or at least the 17-page stories that we'd seen. It wouldn't have surprised me if it was just abandoned scripts. But I kind of agree with Michael. If Wein had so much care for the characters, where he wanted to make the image, as we were talking about last episode, where he had a whole superhero plot idea for Clay Kendall, wouldn't this have been kind of the ideal moment to at least fulfill that little endeavor?
But what this does is it completely showcases Green Lantern, and I think that has some value to it.
Okay, I could see that. Overall, I did enjoy reading it. As Michael said, it was fun, but I would not for example, the Superman 90s retroactive special. I actually now consider that canon. I consider that part of the continuity.
Exact same here, and that's how we're going to deal with it on From Crisis to Crisis.
But we've still got
a little while till we need to.
Yeah. With this, I just felt like it was a fun story, but I wouldn't shoehorn it into continuity. It's fine as a standalone, but that's about as far as it goes for me. Those are my thoughts.
Is that what you have?
I didn't have that many page-by-page notes.
Okay. Well, I tried to keep it page-by-page, but then I just lost track of what pages were what, and so I don't actually have page numbers for a lot of these. Page 3, not Shark.
We all had pretty much a similar note.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere out in the interwebs, Scott Gardner cries out.
On page 4, it occurs to me that if Stewart had just thought quickly enough, he could have caught those missiles without having to leave Shark. But oh well.
But how would he get them into the sun?
I don't know. He can deal with that later.
True.
Removing the oxygen from around Shark was a pretty awesome move. I totally dig on that.
I like it when Sue Storm does it.
It is nice to see Tawny again. I know that we're actually, before too long, we're not going to see her pretty much at all. And the relationship between her and John is over. He's with Katma for right now. The trick with the boombox is something I totally want to be able to do. Especially with cars with subwoofers driven by jerks who love their music so much that they want everybody to not only hear it but feel it.
And it's rattling their bumper off because they didn't set it up correctly.
Yes, exactly. The only thing is I wouldn't have bothered with the little gremlin thing. I would have just left it alone. Like, nope, it's broken. Just broken. Sorry. Broken. So John coming out of the closet is not at all what I expected to have happen at this moment.
What did you expect to happen?
No, I just was not expecting to have that happen the context of an issue. I knew that it was coming up. And so I just thought to myself, well, is this how it is going to work in the comics? Because I read this first. So it's just kind of a weird weird little thing.
Oh, okay. You read this before the issues we covered last episode.
Yes, correct. Okay. And, oh, man, when she ratted him out, what a insert something word that's not good that I can't say on the show. She is awful. I officially hate her now. I mean, what she did in the original story, you know, it's not great, but it wasn't a flat-out betrayal like this is.
And right, because in those stories, ignoring this issue, in those, you never got any sense that Tawny really had any feelings for John. She was just after the story the whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Or vice versa, really.
I mean, he seemed to be into her and like he was courting her. And I don't know, maybe that would have gone somewhere if Len Wein had continued on. But it's really hard to say. I do love this question that the reporters are asking him questions about other heroes. And is it true that Wonder Woman colors her hair? What kind of a question is that? She's Greek. She's got dark hair. Deal with it. Oh, my goodness. What's the deal with Batman's ears? Now, here's the thing. As a journalist myself, there's still a certain level of responsibility, especially when you find out the whole truth about something. Because when I first started writing for the school newspaper when I was in college, I was given a story that was about drugs on campus. There had apparently been a whole bunch of pot brought on campus, and I started investigating. And, of course, all that I really knew about journalism I learned from Lois and Clark. So I learned everything. I learned who had them, when they got on campus, how much got on campus, where they came from, and what people were actually buying them. And I couldn't report any of that. I don't even know why I bothered trying to find out.
Oh, Jeffrey, you just totally, you had a perfect setup. I took the high road, just so you know.
Okay.
Because you're like, I found out where, when. I was going to make a joke about how that was for your personal use, but.
No, that was before I ever smoked pot. I didn't smoke pot till about 2 years later.
I know, it was just a joke.
Okay. Well, it wasn't very funny, so there. Deal with it.
Wow.
Oh, come on.
I know.
And then recently I had that story about the Man of Steel Facebook page that was on movies.com. And it was all about how the Facebook page was actually taken down for less than 24 hours. And I have the names of the people who are responsible for it. And I'm not going to publish that.
Would you private message them?
No. No, I was asked not to, but I was given them. But I mean, I'm under no obligation necessarily to not publish them. I choose not to.
It's because of journalistic integrity.
I suppose, but I mean, there are some journalists who would go ahead and do that, and that is also considered to be journalistic integrity. If your editor says no, you need to do the whole story, then you can turn around and say no, I'm going to protect my source. You don't always have to protect your source. But I mean, that's just how I roll, I guess. But without reading on, I was immediately at this point predicting that Tawny was going to get into some sort of serious trouble, because that was clearly the setup. After that, I flipping hate Sonar, and I love it when John says, talk about starting at the bottom. And then after that, yeah, did I call it with Tawny or what? Of course, that's exactly what was going to happen. Now, in the fight with Sonar, all I can think is that the ring, the Green Lantern ring, I talked about this in the previous episode, it really should protect him from those kinds of weapons. Just saying. He was just at the bottom of the ocean. He can handle some sound waves. When John and by the way, the whole sound wave thing, that actually can be real. There are it's not something that's necessarily used very often, but riot police now do have this weapon that creates a sound wave that when it hits you, it hurts. Like, you just feel pain, and all you want to do is not be where you are, and so it's a crowd dispersal thing, and it's relatively safe, and it actually does exist. So, just saying. But John should be able to deal with that. when John is catching Tawny while she's falling, he really rubs salt in the wound by saying, "I told you so." Just two pages before, she said to him, "Well, you told me so." "Well, I told you so." "Yeah, you told me so." "Yeah, but I told you so." And this line, I love this ending with Sonar. "Why don't you just publish your patents?" Holy spit! Everybody thinks this about villains who have these massively helpful, useful machines that they create, and they use them to do things like rob banks. Marv Wolfman said exactly that to me when I was interviewing him with Michael Bailey for From Crisis to Crisis. I want to say it was like episode 16 or something, that it just seemed silly that Lex Luthor would have as a mad scientist, would have these amazing inventions, and he would use them to like rob banks. Which was actually part of the impetus for him to become a billionaire. Part of it, anyway.
Now, protective leagues.
Yeah. If I were a Green Lantern villain, I would take the warning to stay away from Tawny as an invitation, even though he says she doesn't mean anything to him anymore. Because he does kind of go on to say, you know, leave these people alone. Leave the people around me alone. No, that's not going to happen. If he just said, "Look, I hate this woman, I dare you to kidnap her," then she'd probably be fine. But now that he's out, I was really looking forward to see how it would work out in the upcoming books. And since I read this first, and I'm looking to continue enjoying the story as it's unfolding there.
Cool. So is that it?
That's everything.
And I'll agree completely. I enjoy the way it's playing out more in the regular book than what we see here, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I do prefer the original. And it's not just because I read that first, because I didn't read that first.
All right, well, thanks everybody for joining us for this special episode. In the next regular episode of the show, which will be out on the 22nd of the month, we will be looking at Green Lantern issues 190 to 193. So until then, this is Michael Bradley.
I'm David Weider.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we'll see you then. Thanks for listening to another episode of Green Lantern's Light, hosted by Michael Bradley,
Jeffrey Taylor,
and J. David Weider. Show notes, past episodes, and other information about the show can be found at greenlanternslight.com. You can also subscribe to the show directly via the RSS feed and on iTunes.
If you'd like to get in touch with the show, drop us a line to greenlanternpodcast@gmail.com or use the contact form at the website. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter to get updates and interact with us directly. Let us know your thoughts, and we might even read your message on a future episode.
Green Lantern and all related elements are copyright DC Comics. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and that you'll come back next month. But until then,
in brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape our sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware our power.
Green Lantern's light.